This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Republican members of the Ohio Redistricting Commission approved new state House and Senate districts just hours before the Ohio Supreme Court's deadline. And once again, the vote came over the objections of Democrats. Joining Cincinnati Edition to discuss the latest on these districts are Ohio Public Radio's State House News Bureau reporter and producer Andy Chow. Welcome, Andy.
Hi, Lucy.
Hey, and University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Political Science, Dr. David Niven. Thanks for being here, David.
My pleasure.
If you have questions, you can join our conversation by calling 513-419-7100, emailing talk at wvxu.org, or send us a tweet. So let's get started. First, how did we get to this point where the Ohio Supreme Court is rejecting these maps from the Redistricting Commission? Andy, can you start out by taking me through the process up to now?
So I guess it depends on how far back you want to go. So in 2015, this whole redistricting process was reformed by a statewide ballot initiative that voters approved overwhelmingly. And so now in 2021, the Ohio Redistricting Commission got together and drew up maps in the middle of the night, pushing up against that deadline as well. So they're very familiar with pressing deadlines. And they got together and drew a map that was then almost immediately challenged by voter rights advocates and democratically backed groups, because those maps, for example, in the 99 seat Ohio House, the Republicans drew seats that favored Republicans by 62 seats versus 37 Democratic seats. And the Senate Republicans drew 23 seats for themselves and 10 seats for Democrats. The whole reason that was thrown into a challenge and then the Supreme Court agreed with the challenge is that those maps did not reflect Ohio's voter preference. So when you look at Ohio and how many people are Republicans, how many people vote Democratic, it splits about 54% Republican, 46% Democratic. Those old maps did not reflect that proportionality requirement in the Constitution. So the Ohio Redistricting Commission met back again on Saturday, and I was there all day. And they redrew the maps, and they gave Democrats more seats. They drew more seats for Democrats. And so now we're looking at a House map that has 57 Republican seats, 42 Democratic seats, getting closer to that 54%, 46% proportionality. But Democrats say, one, that is still not reflecting Ohio's proportional partisan breakdown. And two, when you take a closer look at those districts, of those 42 Democratic districts, 12 of them are very competitive, basically toss-ups. So this is still a map that opponents say could create a supermajority for Republicans. Mm.
So David, is it even possible to hit those percentages exactly and come to a bipartisan agreement on these things?
Well, those are two very different questions. Is it possible to hit those marks? It is possible to hit those marks. And there's actually a handful of demonstration maps out there from scholars and voting groups that have shown that you can hit those marks if you have a mind to. Now, can you get a bipartisan agreement on that? You know, that really hinged on whether Governor DeWine and Secretary LaRose had an interest in coming up with a fair map. They certainly talked about it. They certainly presented themselves as if they did, but then they just reran the first process that we had, which was, you know, produced a very Republican map. This new map is kind of a Trojan horse Republican map. As Andy said, it's superficially closer to fair, but it actually positions Republicans to potentially grow their majority, even as, you know, they're only getting a little bit more than half the vote.
Mm. And the maps in question, they didn't get the bipartisan support they needed to make them last the full decade. So, Andy, even if the court approves them, they'll expire in 4 years. What are the Democrats and Republicans at odds about? Why don't they want these maps to last for 10 years?
Well, and, you know, when it comes to the four-year aspect of all of this, it's actually something that I'm actually working on a story on this right now, because, again, back in 2015, when Democrats and Republicans and voter rights groups and other interested parties were working on a possible redistricting reform agreement, one of the things that was late to come out of that is this idea of a four-year map. And it's supposed to be somewhat of a punishment or a disincentive for not reaching a bipartisan agreement. And you say, hey, if Democrats and Republicans can't get along, then a slap on the wrist would be that you only get four-year maps. But what it's turning into, and I just talked to House Speaker Bob Kupp this morning about this issue, is that at least when it comes to, in his opinion, when it comes to this specific process this year, over the past year, is that the four-year map is actually not as much of a discouragement as people once thought it would be. And in fact, it's having the reverse effect, where Democrats might be looking at it and saying, hey, if we can't get what we want, let's not vote for it. And then maybe the tide will shift our way in 4 years. And the same thing with Republicans. They say, well, if we can't get quite what we want, let's just go with a four-year map and just do it again in 4 years.
Maybe they just all love spending that time together. So let's talk about the concept of proportionality. David, can you talk a little bit about what that means and why it's required in this whole process?
Well, the big thing is that for a long time, we've had a sense when we look at maps that this isn't fair. And these maps get challenged in courts, and judges struggle with the question of, okay, boy, this doesn't really look fair, but what's the precise borderline between a fair map and an unfair map? And so one of the innovations in the Ohio Constitution now is a definition of fair, that the total number of districts won by a party should resemble the total number of votes they get, which seems, you know, kind of simple and intuitive and indeed fair. So, you know, what we've had in Ohio in recent maps, and we've had this at the state house level and we've had this at the congressional level, is Republicans can actually win huge majorities of the seats without even getting half of the votes. And that's really been the problem. And what the intention of the reforms, and obviously, as Andy suggested, that were overwhelmingly supported by Ohio voters, was to get a political outcome that looks like the way people vote. And so if people in Ohio are going to vote roughly 50-50 for the parties, we should get a roughly 50-50 legislature. And here's the bottom line. Here's why all this is so important, because I know we can get bogged down in the details and the minutiae of this, but here's the bottom line. The Ohio legislature, if you add up the totality of the policies it produces, is more conservative than the legislature of Mississippi right now. And there's only one way that happens. It happens because, not because the voters of Ohio are more conservative than the voters of Mississippi, but because the maps that Ohioans live under are more conservative than the maps of Mississippi.
Hmm. And Andy, can you walk us through the big differences between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party on these districts? Democrats say the maps are invalid. Republicans have a different take. Can you kind of explain where they're both coming down on these?
Yeah, there was an interesting part during the commission meeting on Saturday where Senate President Matt Huffman, a Republican from Lima, actually had these big clipboards with big printouts of the different districts. And he was making the case, and I think David could speak to this too, was making the case that the map that the Democrats drew, which did bring the proportionality number up to what the Supreme Court was calling for. So the Democrats drew maps that had 54 Republican seats and 45 Democratic seats, spread out the competitiveness a little better. And in the Senate, it was 18 Republican seats to 15 Democratic seats. So the Democrats said, hey, here's a map proposal for the House, for the Senate, that hits this proportionality issue. And the Republicans countered by saying, no, while it might hit the proportionality requirement of the Constitution, it doesn't follow other parts of the Constitution that includes trying not to split up different townships and different voting areas and trying to make those districts as compact as possible. Now, that's been something that the Republicans have been leaning on for a while now, but that's why they say that their map is the most constitutional, because it gets as close to as possible to proportionality, but without violating other requirements of the Constitution.
Ah, gotcha. And David, how safe are some of these Democratic districts compared to the Republican districts that are part of this process so far?
Well, you know, Andy hit on a key vote or a key fact in terms of the voting outcomes here. Some of these districts have been drawn so that The Republicans are going to call them Democratic leaning when in reality, the number is something along the lines of, you know, 49.5% expected vote for the Democrats and 49.4% expected vote for Republicans. So that's not Democratic leaning. Of course, that's a true toss up. And, you know, the larger point is, and this is really important, and, you know, folks need to understand this. One of the ways to measure the fairness of a map is how many votes are wasted for each party. And the academics have all kinds of jargon terms for these things, but it's just a bottom line. If I cram the supporters of one party into districts and sort of waste extra votes, or I divide the supporters of another party in as small pieces as I can affect how efficient a vote is, how, you know, much that vote translates into a seat. And what we have in the Republican maps here is a inefficiency that favors Republicans by about 6.5%. And that's more unfair than about 2/3 of all the maps that have been in place across the country for the last two decades. So this is in the face of reforms that should make Ohio a leader for fairness, that should, you know, set a new, you know, a new high water mark for fairness. And instead, what we've got after the court threw out the first map, which was even more unfair, is a map that's, you know, on average, less fair than what a typical legislature is coming up with across the country.
And David, can you speak to how these maps are treating Hamilton County specifically?
Sure. I mean, what we're seeing in Hamilton County in both the Democratic and the Republican proposals has been, you know, a array of about five or so strongly Democratic state house seats that really take about the eastern half of the county, a little bit more than halfway through the eastern half, and then leave about two Republican-oriented seats on the western edge of things. Where they really differ is in the state Senate. And the way state Senate districts work in Ohio, of course, is you just combine three state house districts, and then you have a state Senate district. Well, you can do that a bunch of different ways, even within a county. The way the Republicans do it makes Hamilton County, a Democratic county, have a majority Republican representation in the state Senate. The way the Democrats do it, they take a Democratic Hamilton County and give it Democratic representation in the state Senate. And that, you know, you can just do that as simple. You don't need advanced mapping software to just look and, you know, count to three. And the Democrats and Republicans are doing it very differently.
And Lucy, if I can jump in here.
Yeah.
There's an interesting moment during the commission meeting. I mean, you've got people like Governor Mike DeWine is sitting in on this commission, Secretary of State Frank LaRose, Auditor Keith Faber, and they're saying, why can't the Republican leaders in the legislature and the Democratic leaders in the legislature come together to really make a map that everybody can agree on? And there is actually a moment where the map maker for the Democrats said, listen, if you have an issue with compactness, if you have an issue on how we drew this district or that district to achieve proportionality, then they're more than willing to sit down with the Republican map drawers and actually make something that they can come to an agreement on. And at the end of the day, they say that that didn't happen. And rather, the commission just decided to go on and have a vote anyway. And that's how we ended up with the maps that we have right now.
So, Andy, what comes next? Do we have any precedent to what happens if the Supreme Court rejects these maps again?
First of all, the groups that originally filed the legal challenge have until the end of the day today to raise any objections, any legal objections. And we're hearing through several people that that is going to happen. It's just going to happen late at night tonight. And then what happens next? We are really kind of in uncharted territory still. This is, again, a new process that was approved by voters and is the first time that it's been in action. Talking to House Speaker Bob Kupp today about it, you do have the filing deadline coming up next week. And so what is going to happen if a lot of these legislators and people who want to run for the legislature don't really know what district they're running in? And so it's possible that the General Assembly might have to vote on extending the deadline, the filing deadline, in order to give the commission more time to redraw maps if all of this were to happen, if a legal challenge is objections are raised, and if the Supreme Court takes it on again.
Mm. So I'd like to ask both of you, what are your predictions? Andy, you can go first. Do you think they'll approve these maps or reject them? You got any money riding on this?
I would never have any money riding on what a court would do because it's always just so unpredictable. I think if you're trying to read the tea leaves and what has happened in the past, you know, Maureen O'Connor, the Republican Chief Justice on the Supreme Court, was the deciding swing vote in the earlier ruling. And so it really depends on what she thinks of all of this. She already has stated in her opinion that the state should consider something other than this redistricting commission and something other than politicians drawing their own maps. And so is their attempt to reach this proportionality good enough? It will really probably come down to her opinion on that, the Chief Justice.
Gotcha. And let me get to your thoughts, David. Do you have any predictions on what the court might do?
Well, I think Andy is right that it does come down to the Chief Justice. And I think what the Chief Justice will see, I think what anybody would see looking at this map is, this is the worst map they could possibly draw that they thought they might be able to get away with. And, you know, if that's good enough for the Chief Justice, it stands. I suspect it's not good enough for the Chief Justice. I don't think she will think they are honoring their oath. I don't think she will think they are honoring the directive of the court to seek a map that doesn't unfairly benefit either party. So what I suspect is they'll throw this map out. And of course, then it goes straight back to the very same people who drew the map in the first place, and they'll be told to draw yet another one.
Mm-hmm. David, can you talk a little bit more about the Chief Justice and remind our listeners of why she was the swing vote?
Well, what we have is a Republican majority on the court, and Ohio has had one for over 30 years. But in the Chief Justice, we have somebody who is, number one, retiring. So she doesn't have a lot of, you know, sort of political vulnerability to anybody's objections to her moves. And then number two, somebody who does have a longstanding interest in, you know, fair Ohio election practices. And in fact, 10 years ago, as part of a minority, she voted to throw out the maps in place, even when there wasn't this explicit fairness standard in the Ohio Constitution. So 10 years later, she has a four, you know, vote majority thinking along the lines that she is, and she has stronger language in the Ohio Constitution to back her up. So, you know, she's not doing anything inconsistent with what she's, you know, ruled on in the past.
The other, Lucy, the other interesting thing is exactly what is going to be the argument that these original plaintiffs bring up. And are they going to just continue to focus on proportionality? Are they going to focus on the process to which, like, so for example, when the commission had their meeting, they didn't have any public hearings on the new maps that were approved. So what is going to be the argument that the original plaintiffs focus on if they were to raise objections today?
Well, and we talked about how the filing deadline's coming up. There are all these questions about the districts and the maps. What's the worst case scenario, I mean, in all this?
The worst case scenario is we don't know what the districts will be like. Candidates don't know where or whether to run. And, you know, the uncertainty is drawn out. And the absolute worst case scenario is, in the end, that uncertainty, you know, benefits unfairness. But, you know, that's a risk that has to be taken, because otherwise is to sort of surrender in the face of you know, really defiance of the clear language of the Constitution.
What are you hearing, Andy? Is that possible outcome making folks nervous in Columbus?
Well, I would argue that we're already seeing the worst case scenario play out, if not right up against it, because of all the confusion that it's creating, because of the possibility that the legislature might have to vote to extend the deadline. Something that we haven't really talked about, but it's worth noting, is that the Census Bureau data was also delayed too. So those numbers didn't get in until late already. So we're really coming up on a lot of deadlines here.
Well, thank you both so much. I really appreciate your being here. And we want to note that the University of Cincinnati is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Technical director is Josh Elstro. The theme music was composed by Rob Fetters. I'm Lucy May.